Welcome to Partnership Plus, your go-to source for modern partnership wisdom with your host, Phil Hayes St. Clair.
Hey everyone, it's Phil, and you're about to listen to an episode with Kath Stone, who is the Executive Director of Donor Services at the Australian Red Cross Blood Service, otherwise known as Lifeblood. We're going to dive into a range of different topics here, which are going to illuminate how it is that Lifeblood does the amazing work that it does to help strangers in the fight of their life. So without further ado, here is Kath Stone from Lifeblood.
I'm Michael Klim.
Michael Klim has just broken the world record.
World champion, Olympic gold medalist, and plasma recipient. An autoimmune disorder took everything from me. Plasma donors helped me get it back.
Every day, countless Australians like Michael Klim rely on plasma. Plasma found in your blood. To become a donor with Australian Red Cross Lifeblood, search Lifeblood. Give life.
Well, I couldn't be more excited to meet with an old friend, somebody who runs such an important part of an organisation that is so important to so many people. Everyone, I'd like to welcome Kath Stone to Partnership Plus. And Kath Stone is the Executive Director of Donor Experience at Lifeblood.
Great to have you, Phil. That was a big introduction. Thank you. We've got a great team doing it with us.
Well, it's an amazing team. And for those who don't know, I've been donating for a very, very long time. In fact, yesterday was my 165th plasma donation. And it was one of those things where I just love going in and I feel quite bad when I can't. Yes. And I know there are many, many, many Australians who feel the same way. So I'm excited to talk about a range of things with you today, Kath, in particular, yes, about partnerships, but to also unlock maybe some of the magic that goes on behind the scenes at Lifeblood, because people can see the ads, they can see our friend Michael Klim, they can feel like they really want to contribute, but it is really just scratching the surface when it comes to all the things that go on and the amazing logistical effort, the scientific effort, all of the stuff that has to happen. And we're still always chasing our tail a little bit in terms of donors because there's such a demand and such a need for the plasma and blood that comes out of it. So before we get into all that really fun stuff, you can tell I could talk about this for ages. Let's start with you and your backstory, because you've had a really interesting journey to date that led you to Lifeblood. So what's the Kath Stone backstory?
Oh, the very quick one. So I come from a small town, Wellington, New Zealand. Funnily enough, a degree in agricultural economics. So as a Kiwi, you know, it's right. Really handy to be actually qualified to count sheep. I went to the New Zealand Apple and Pear Marketing Board, was the first big job in my career. And from there, kind of speed dated through Deloitte into Australia for a great job with Mannheim, an automotive auction company, as it happens. From there, jumped into one of Australia's favourite airlines. I joined Jetstar into their engineering team. Spent a great decade of my life. Their true mission to make travel accessible for more people was one I really believed in. But the opportunity to do something as incredible as Lifeblood does, I couldn't go past. And so took the change out of aviation and all those engines into this incredible organisation. So that's it in a nutshell.
So somebody walks up to you and has, for whatever reason, not clocked the amazing marketing work, the street signs, the advertising, and doesn't know what Lifeblood is all about. What's the spiel that you give to them about the role that Lifeblood plays across Australia?
So our purpose is essentially a life-giving donations for life-changing outcomes. And it's simple as the generosity of just over 500,000 Australian people that come in, donate blood and plasma, or in other cases, young mums donating milk. We've got really starting to broaden into some other biological products, those that register for organ donation all part of what Lifeblood do. And really it's as simple as it gets, doing something for somebody else who you will probably never, ever meet, but may give them another Christmas or birthday or simply hope for an improved quality of life.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because the idea of, and I use this turn of phrase often with people that I, you know, beat over the head every time I see them and say, have you donated yet? It's really about helping a stranger in the fight of their life. And the reality is you'll never know where the products end up going to. But once that magical fluid comes out of your arm and it goes into all the logistics, the central processing centers to get it, you know, QA'd and then put into the hands of hospitals or areas. I'm always fascinated when I receive the text message a day or two later saying, you know, this is going to help somebody in Darwin or it's going to help someone in Perth. And it just blows my mind that you can be sitting there half an hour, 40 minutes or an hour, and then, you know, very soon after that, nothing really gets stockpiled because this is really delicate material. It ends up being put to use straight away. It's really quite, really quite something. So we'll link to a whole bunch of places in the show notes for people to go and have a look and to get familiar with a number of the campaigns, which are so beautifully done. And I know that you have a really strong hand in all of those messages that get out there. But let's go back to some points in your career where partnerships really played an important role. And they can be as small and off the radar, or they can be ones which are really profound that really shifted the needle. Can you go back and tell us about some of, you know, those partnership experiences where it really just, it lit your head on fire and it made your job or the job of your team just easier to get things done?
Over the career, Phil? Over my career? I was reflecting probably this morning, there was a couple of, I mean, airlines are fantastic at doing partnerships. If you think about loyalty schemes and who they partner with and what they do, but I think about a couple in my time leading or being part of an aircraft entry into service is probably a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Yeah. And the idea that it takes a number of suppliers to come together, but the particular one I'm thinking about is with an organisation as globally recognised as GE, and the incredible work they do in helping educate organisations in best practice. They do some amazing leading work in digital twinning for anyone that's really into how digital twinning might take us forward. You know, GE are the class in it. And what GE make available in their partnerships is, you know, that education opportunity for leaders to step into spaces and meet with other people and have your minds simply opened to a whole world of possibility that you don't just get coming to work every day. Things like that, that really where suppliers provide opportunities in ways to the partners that they're working with for upcoming leaders, for future education. I think those are great examples. Another one of my favourites, as we were looking to launch Jetstar in Japan, you know, this was a country that had never had low-cost travel. And the idea, I'll never forget the story of a young boy that it was just so expensive to go to his mother's funeral and by bullet train, which was the main source of travel.
Yeah.
And so Jetstar going into Japan and creating that market for low-cost travel and a partnership that our incredible marketing and sales team arranged with Lawson's. They're like 7-Eleven. You can go in there and purchase your tickets on a little kiosk at Lawson's. And so really opening up to the Japanese market this way to easily access and be educated about low-cost travel. It's game-changing.
I think when I look at the way that suppliers work with organizations, I always find it very fascinating that there are people that look at suppliers to provide just the basics. You know, we need this, you pay for that, we'll give that to you and that's it. And it is such a small part of what the potential of a relationship could be. you know, the ability to sort of do this innovation together, get closer, collaborate and find ways to do things very differently, because there's no monopoly on great ideas. The ability to find those people go, actually, we could do something more for you. And in my experience, suppliers are absolutely chomping at the bit to want to play that role. It's just often they're not given the permission to be welcomed into that conversation. So I'm not surprised to hear that being the case. When we turn to Lifeblood and we look at the way in which it partners with so many different organizations, we were very, very pleased and quite humbled to be able to partner with Lifeblood at Drop By Health on a whole range of collaborative research that we were doing with the amazing research team there. What are some of the partnerships that operate with Lifeblood to make that entire ecosystem work that people might not know are actually there?
Yeah, you've actually touched on, I mean, the magic of Lifeblood is we are more than the retail fronts that you see on the street. And those partnerships, like the one we had with your incredible team, are essential to how we're thinking about making donation something that Australians don't walk by but are part of the identity of Australia. And so as we talk about building a movement of donors, we're thinking more and more about the partnerships that we have and how we use them. And we think, you know, just this year, we partnered for the first time with Movember, an incredible organisation that has really given us a showcase in how to build a movement and a Movember movement around something as important as men's health. You know, we've been working behind the scenes with them. And we're just starting to unlock the incredible power of, if you think about the places blood and blood product are used, you know, who are natural partners for us, Cancer Council Australia. We collabed with earlier this year. Cancer is such a big user of the products we do. But to your point, behind the scenes, the universities are great partnerships for us. We've just announced a partnership through the innovation team with RMIT. It gives us a fantastic opportunity to support our future workers, our future thinkers and thought leaders into supporting us with some of the innovative ideas that we need to tackle. And, you know, as those bright minds are coming through our education systems, how do we work together to create experiences that they need for their education and that spark the fire in us to think differently about how we approach things. So I think there's opportunities there with education, with the hospitals, incredible partnership with Fiona Stanley in Perth on what we're doing with microbiome. Those are the kind of partnerships that a lot of people don't have the opportunity to be aware of.
Yeah, and it's another one comes to mind as well, which I remember talking to you about and just being surprised. I don't know why this wasn't immediately obvious to me, but when I first started donating, and I'm still with some of the nurses that I started donating with, they know our children, they know our history. Whenever I see them and I go back to a particular donor center so I can catch up with them, because it feels like you're catching up with friends, these are career nursing professionals who have done a lot of time, particularly through COVID, were doing multiple jobs to sort of, you know, help the supply chain of talent be where they needed to be, taking, frankly, extraordinary risks to themselves to try and make things continue to work. And I had always thought that the people who were helping to do your assessments, insert the needle, look after you while you're there, were all nurses. And what I didn't realize was there is this spectacular employment pathway for people who are not nurse trained to become an assistant, but for all intents and purposes, from a donor's perspective, are very highly trained to do exactly the same job for people who are coming in to donate. And I remember speaking to two people on two separate occasions. One young woman who had just come out of university in a degree qualification that was nothing to do with healthcare, and had read an ad somewhere about joining Lifeblood as a I've forgotten the term. I feel like it's
You're right. It's a nursing assistant.
Right. And so then I asked the same question of another guy who had finished school and decided that this was an interesting path for him to take. Both of them could have been easily mistaken for very experienced, well-trained professional nurses. Yet the standard was so high, and these people could not have spoken more highly about Lifeblood as an employer, as somebody where they've found a point of belonging. And I know this can sound like a bit of an ad for Lifeblood. To some extent it is, but it's one of those things where there is something magical about the culture, the mission, and how it all connects together, layered with this massive depth of quality, that it's really quite remarkable. And so when you think about how those kind of initiatives have been born, because yes, there's a lot of above the line, you know, attract more donors, build the movements, do the things and the great marketing. But below the line in those other areas, there is some real magic happening that I'd love to see other organizations do more of that kind of work. But when it comes to those teams and those people, I've never heard anybody say that they don't love coming to work, which is a pretty rare thing to have.
I think we've had to adapt, though, Phil. So first of all, thank you. You know, we have an incredibly 3,700 strong team and volunteers. But we have to keep adapting. We've got a young workforce that wants more flexible work. They want to study. They want to do two or three jobs. We've got nurses that want to keep clinically current in the NICU units or the EDs. And so what we've really had to challenge ourselves is thinking about how we ensure that we're open the hours that donors need us to be, but equally that we can support a workforce that has got changing requirements and will continue to change. So I think where partnerships also bring a real benefit is challenging that thought set on what's ahead for us in the workforce space. And so, you know, we're keeping a close eye and is adapting as quickly as we can to make sure we do have, you know, the young tattoo artists that have come in out of tattooing or hospitality or personal trainers and want to do something more. And that purpose of changing lives, it's tough to go past that, really.
Indeed it is. When you think about all of your history of seeing the things in aviation, agriculture, now in Lifeblood, what do you think the future of partnership looks like? I mean, we're coming out of a really strange COVID experience. The world, for all intents and purposes, doesn't feel like today it's in great shape. There's a lot of things going on. When you think about the idea of partnerships between organizations, what are you seeing or hoping to see maybe in the next number of years about the way that companies collaborate and come together to get business done, not just to hand wave and to make it all look good above the line, but to actually get business done? What's your sense on where this is going?
I think you touched on it in the word before around belonging. People need to feel they belong to something. People need to feel connected with the communities they live and work in. I think we've all found that. We've got some big, you know, kind of economic challenges ahead for us, and thinking about how we leverage those partnerships to get greater outcomes. You know, when you've got a contract with a supplier, you know, the ability for a supplier to contribute to their ESG plans and their social good means we offer a ready-made approach to bring on your teams and donate and get them connected to a world that is thinking about something bigger than themselves. And I think those partnerships offer you a chance to expand your minds and thoughts and how you approach the world. So, I know you and I sit and cover much ground when we chat on the future of the world and how those expanded relationships from one organisation to another, certainly for us, it's that word of mouth, it's that advocacy, and the more you partner with new people, I think the more we can connect and change the world with the people we work with and connect with. So,
yeah, I wonder, you know, when we think about all the leaders that we know and we're surrounded by, you know, in our respective works, people sort of are magnetized to us, you know, and the mission and what we're there to do. When you look at other leaders who are in other industries, and you're in your experience of, you know, intersecting with a great many people, what do you think people are missing when they hear the term partnership? When we're trying to think about the idea of collaboration, a lot of leaders will go, well, we can vertically integrate everything that we do. There's not really a need for us to partner. We can go it alone. We've got good capability. It feels to me in the conversations I have that more and more leaders are realizing that trying to do everything well is nearly impossible. What do you think, what would be your advice to other leaders, given your experience in partnership, to say, you know, think a little bit differently, because there is huge upside to not actually doing it all yourself? What sort of advice would you give to colleagues at that level?
Yeah, 100% agree. And as you look at the changing nature of the world, the diversity of thought, you know, we look across our diversity, equity, inclusion plan, and I know as an organisation, we all know that we have more work to do to be more inclusive, more diverse as an organisation to reflect the world and community we live in. We're not always going to get that through recruiting, you know, the brightest mind or that, and nor do we need to. If we really leverage the partnerships that we work with and are challenged by the diversity of those organisations, of those partners, you know, we get the benefit of understanding more greatly the community that we serve, the challenges that are within it, and what we have to bring. I don't think you always need to recruit or hire consultants. You can actually get new ways of thinking within the partnerships that exist if you're prepared to leverage the value of them.
Let me ask you a question about giving advice to your younger self. So we've seen a lot of things, you've seen a lot of things, and let's be honest, when we're 20 years old trying to work out who we are, where we fit, and what the future actually looks like for us, like any 20-year-old, we're ambitious but probably a little bit clueless. So what would be the advice you would go back and give your 20-year-old self so that you can be as happy, content, excited, engaged, but also aware of what's going on around the world?
Yeah, it's a great question. I reflected on this and I might appeal to your, I mean, you and I share a kind of interest and passion for women's health. And if I think about the one thing, and I've lived a very full and happy life, but I think the one thing, if I could go back to my 20-year-old self as a young woman, as a woman that was facing into some health challenges, it would be to be more curious, to have had the courage to ask more questions, explore more. And I think certainly I would certainly encourage any young woman, I'm going to appeal to the female audience, you know, to be curious about the health and the advice that you're getting, because you certainly have the power within yourself to change and be curious about what lies ahead and not settle on a course. I think that is actually about the only advice I'd give myself, is that curiosity and be brave in the challenge of what other people
super good advice. And just on the women's health side, you know, even in the last 12 to 18 months, the number of voices coming into the women's health arena, from cancer survivorship through to identification of rare diseases, through to menopause, through to, you know, maternity-related conditions, there is such a growing and strong voice of women and men who are trying to work out, how do we do this better? There's probably never been a better time in life to be able to have that curiosity. So I completely endorse what you're saying. Ask more questions. Don't settle for the answers you get until you feel comfortable with the answers you receive. Yep. Very, very important. So, Kath, I would like to spend the last little bit of our conversation today talking a little bit more about the donor experience, and when somebody is coming into Lifeblood for the first time, they've heard us or they've heard someone else, or they've been invited by an existing donor to come and donate together, which, by the way, the hashtag Better Together is one of my favorites. It's one of those things where I've had multiple occasions where old friends that we have madly crazy schedules, we never get a chance to catch up, but we've booked in a plasma appointment together, and it's the best sort of hour and 10 minutes that we get together, and we can't go anywhere. So it's great. Tell us a little bit about what someone could expect when they come in for the first time. And if there are any sort of concerns that people would have coming in donating, I know that needling can be a bit of a thing for people. Share people with what that experience is like so they can feel really good about it.
Yeah, it's a great question. And we're really hard. We're in the people business. But I think the first thing is to know that if you're afraid of needles, you're not alone. I think our stats are about 1 in 7 are fearful of needles. Interesting. We have a great team. They're really educated in making you feel welcome. They take you through questions of eligibility to check your safety as a donor is as important to us as the product that we're processing for patients. We take a little bit of time with that. We want to be assured that, you know, you have the information you need. We really encourage you to hydrate before you donate. And then you get to spend some time on the couch, as you say, Phil, and we're exploring new ways in which, if you're giving us an hour of your time, what's the get for you? Is it, you know, 45 minutes of peace and quiet in the couch? Is it a new way of a new Netflix drop that you got 45 minutes to watch? How might you spend that time with us? And I think that's one of the things we continue to challenge us on, and the team are keen to know how you like to do that. So when you get into centre and book with a friend, of course, the favourite thing for many people is the opportunity to treat themselves. So it doesn't matter how healthy you are the rest of the month or the rest of the fortnight, the opportunity for the party pie and the milkshake, that guilt-free moment is great, and we certainly love it. I think it's just this month we're running a partnership. Lisa Gorman, an incredible nurse, Australian designer, is partnered with us on our bandage, celebrating and recognising healthcare workers across the country. So you get that beautiful bandage you can show off. And we were with a creative team yesterday who said they love their bandages so much they wore it kind of as the fashion accessory around the office of the day, as that humble brag.
There it is.
We have a challenge not to be the experience you'll walk by, because if not me, then who's donating? And for the one and three of us that are going to need it, Phil, we're grateful to you for your advocacy. And but we need to make more of Australia aware just how essential we are, and that you're more than likely to need us or know someone that will. So let's not wait until that moment.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned before this idea about the partnership with Movember and men's health, and of course, there's women's health as well. One thing that people might not know about, which is something quite important when it comes to looking at your health over time, is that when you come in to donate blood, a number of observations are made. One is to do with blood pressure. The other is to do with hemoglobin. And when you look inside the Lifeblood app, you're able to see that, how it's changed over time. And that kind of what we call longitudinal data is super important to give you a sense about how your health is progressing over time. It is one of the most valuable but latent bits of data that you can get access to for free by doing this at Lifeblood. So there are all these little things that sit in behind this. And I know after speaking with Stephen, the CEO, and yourself over time, that we're looking for ways to surface more of that information so it becomes more accessible and more useful. Because, you know, for the most part, if you're able to measure that over time, it might tell you something that is really important for something that might be coming towards you. Or it just gives you peace of mind that, you know, blood pressure is looking good and your hemoglobin is looking good as well. Two important markers to make sure that you're generally well. So I think all of those little things living below the surface are also pretty cool. Kath, when we look at the anyone who's listening to this right now, what is something that you would like to leave them with about partnerships or about lifeblood, so that they can think a little bit differently about how they partner in their own life with other people?
Well, I certainly think for anyone partnering with us, I mean, the first ask for us always is, have you donated? Do you know about donation? So we're a ready-made, part of any great ESG plan. So that would be the first thing. The challenge we have, as I mentioned before, is that most people think donation is great, but it's normally something someone else will do. The reality is demand for blood product is increasing. Cancer rates are increasing. And I think for us, how we get word out through the partnerships we have, through the organisations we deal with, and that includes all of our suppliers in terms of have you got a lifeblood team? You look across our partnerships with the Australian Defence Force and the emergency services, and for those that already serve their country in incredible ways, they are the biggest donators of blood and plasma product and really set the benchmark in terms of what's possible in organisational partnerships. So, it's not on someone else, it's on all of us to create a safe and healthy blood supply.
Well, I agree. So if you've heard this and you're in the car or you're on your way to work or you're on a run and you think that there is an opportunity to partner with Lifeblood for your organisation, for yourself, for your family or your community, Kath and her team are the people to hit up for that. And we'll leave links in the show notes so people can find out where you are and what to do. We might also include some of that fantastic campaign that involved Michael Klim as well, because that was really something else, and it's very front of people's minds right now. Kath Stone, it is such a pleasure to see you, and thanks for giving up your time to talk with me today. But I'm sure we'll be seeing each other pretty soon.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks for your advocacy and being an incredible donor. 165, hey? Congrats.
Thanks for listening to the end of this episode of Partnership Plus. If you like what you heard, you can share this episode via text message. And if you'd like to build your business partnership muscle, my free weekly newsletter called Wednesday Partnership will help you do just that. You'll find a link in the show notes. Finally, I'm big on encouragement and love to see people be in motion towards their ambitions. So if you know someone who might be struggling, reach out to them with a quick message of encouragement. It could change their life. Thanks again, and I'll see you in the next episode.